20.1. There is no doubt, in my opinion, that unless you change your social order, you can achieve little by way of progress. You cannot mobilize the community either for defense or for offense. You cannot build anything on the foundations of caste. You cannot build up a nation. You cannot build up a morality. Anything that you will build on the foundations of caste will crack and will never be a whole. 20.2. The only question that remains to be considered is how to bring about the reform of the Hindu social order. How to abolish caste? This is a question of supreme importance. There is a view that in the reform of caste, the first step to take is to abolish subcastes. This view is based upon the supposition that there is a greater similarity in manners and status between subcastes than there is between castes. I think this is an erroneous supposition. The Brahmins of northern and central India are socially of lower grade as compared with the Brahmins of the Deccan and southern India. The former are only cooks and water carriers, while the latter occupy a high social position. On the other hand, in northern India, the Vaishyas and Kayasthas are intellectually and socially on a par with the Brahmins of the Deccan and southern India. 20.3. Again, in the matter of food, there is no similarity between the Brahmins of the Deccan and southern India, who are vegetarians, and the Brahmins of Kashmir and Bengal, who are non-vegetarians. On the other hand, the Brahmins of the Deccan and southern India have more in common, so far as food is concerned, with such non-Brahmins as the Gujaratis, Marwaris, Baniyas and Jains. 20.4. There is no doubt that from the standpoint of making the transition from one caste to another easy, the fusion of the Kayasthas of northern India and the other non-Brahmins of southern India with the non-Brahmins of the Deccan and the Dravidian country is more practicable than the fusion of the Brahmins of the south with the Brahmins of the north. But assuming that the fusion of subcastes is possible, what guarantee is there that the abolition of subcastes will necessarily lead to the abolition of castes? On the contrary, it may happen that the process may stop with the abolition of subcastes. In that case, the abolition of subcastes will only help to strengthen the castes and make them more powerful and therefore more mischievous. This remedy is therefore neither practicable nor effective and may easily prove to be a wrong remedy. 20.5. Another plan of action for the abolition of caste is to begin with inter-caste dinners. This also, in my opinion, is an inadequate remedy. There are many castes which allow interdining, but it is a common experience that interdining has not succeeded in killing the spirit of caste and the consciousness of caste. I am convinced that the real remedy is intermarriage. Fusion of blood can alone create the feeling of being kith and kin, and unless this feeling of kinship, of being kindred, becomes paramount, the separatist feeling, the feeling of being aliens created by caste, will not vanish. Among the Hindus, intermarriage must necessarily be a factor of greater force in social life than it need be in the life of the non-Hindus. Where society is already well knit by other ties, marriage is an ordinary incident of life. But where society is cut asunder, marriage as a binding force becomes a matter of urgent necessity. The real remedy for breaking caste is intermarriage. Nothing else will serve as the solvent of caste. 20.6. Your Jat Pat Todak Mandal has adopted this line of attack. It is a direct and frontal attack, and I congratulate you upon a correct diagnosis and more upon your having shown the courage to tell the Hindus what is really wrong with them. Political tyranny is nothing compared to social tyranny, and a reformer who defies society is a much more courageous man than a politician who defies the government. You are right in holding that caste will cease to be an operative force only when interdining and intermarriage have become matters of common course. You have located the source of the disease. 20.7. But is your prescription the right prescription for the disease? Ask yourself this question. Why is it that a large majority of Hindus do not interdine and do not intermarry? Why is it that your cause is not popular? 20.8. There can only be one answer to this question. And it is that interdining and intermarriage are repugnant to the beliefs and dogmas which the Hindus regard as sacred. Caste is not a physical object like a wall of bricks or a line of barbed wire which prevents the Hindus from co-mingling and which has, therefore, to be pulled down. Caste is a notion. It is a state of mind. The destruction of caste does not, therefore, mean the destruction of a physical barrier. It means a notional change. 20.9. Caste may be bad. Caste may lead to conduct so gross as to be called man's inhumanity to man. All the same, it must be recognized that the Hindus observe caste not because they are inhuman or wrong-headed. They observe caste because they are deeply religious. People are not wrong in observing caste. In my view, what is wrong is their religion, which has inculcated this notion of caste. If this is correct, then obviously the enemy you must grapple with is not the people who observe caste, but the Shastras, which teach them this religion of caste. Criticizing and ridiculing people for not interdining or intermarrying, or occasionally holding intercaste dinners and celebrating intercaste marriages, is a futile method of achieving the desired end. The real remedy is to destroy the belief in the sanctity of the Shastras. 20.10. How do you expect to succeed if you allow the Shastras to continue to mold the beliefs and opinions of the people? Not to question the authority of the Shastras, to permit the people to believe in their sanctity and their sanctions, and then to blame the people and to criticize them for their acts as being irrational and inhuman, is an incongruous way of carrying on social reform. Reformers working for the removal of untouchability, including Mahatma Gandhi, do not seem to realize that the acts of the people are merely the results of their beliefs inculcated in their minds by the Shastras, and that people will not change their conduct until they cease to believe in the sanctity of the Shastras on which their conduct is founded. 20.11. No wonder that such efforts have not produced any results. You also seem to be erring in the same way as the reformers working in the cause of removing untouchability. To agitate for and to organize intercaste dinners and intercaste marriage is like forced feeding brought about by artificial means. Make every man and woman free from the thraldom of the Shastras. Cleanse their minds of the pernicious notions founded on the Shastras, and he or she will interdine and intermarry without your telling him or her to do so. 20.12. It is no use seeking refuge in quibbles. It is no use telling people that the Shastras do not say what they are believed to say, if they are grammatically read or logically interpreted. What matters is how the Shastras have been understood by the people. You must take the stand that Buddha took. You must take the stand which Guru Nanak took. You must not only discard the Shastras, you must deny their authority, as did Buddha and Nanak. You must have courage to tell the Hindus that what is wrong with them is their religion, the religion which has produced in them this notion of the sacredness of caste. Will you show that courage?